Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Simply put, our next guest changed the world. In the 1960s, Carol Gilligan was a research assistant at Harvard for the renowned psychologist Lawrence Kohlberg, and later taught the theories of Kohlberg and other esteemed men and concluded they were wrong about women. The thinking was that men were more morally developed because men made moral decisions based on justice, women on care and sensitivity, which wasn't as valued. Carol said, no, women just have different voices. Her 1982 book, In a Different Voice, caused a revolution. So she changed the world. But now she's changing her mind in that she now says that caring voice, it's a human voice, that men can access as well. Her new slim book is In a Human Voice, and Professor Carol Gilligan, who teaches at New York University, joins us. Welcome.
Oh, Robin, it's great to speak with you.
Here you are throwing another rock in the pond. have I got this right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this is astonishing to a lot of young people I've spoken with who can't believe what you were responding to 50, 40 years ago, that women's voices just weren't valued. There were tests used at the time to determine moral development. Women always scored less than men. One test was the What Would Heinz Do?
Oh, right. That's Larry Kohlberg's dilemmas. What would Heinz do? Would he steal the drug to save his wife's life?
Okay. This was a man whose wife was dying. A pharmacist had the medicine that would save her. Heinz couldn't afford it, begged for it. The pharmacist said, but I have to make a living too. The question was, should Heinz steal it? Little boy said, no, that's breaking the law. And that was seen as evolving in men to, yes, steal it because a life is worth more than property. But women scored lower because they were more nuanced?
Well, the way Kohlberg thought you should respond is you should weigh in the abstract the right to life and the right to property. One 11-year-old girl in my book, basically she said, wait a minute, if he steals the drug and he gets caught, Heinz, and goes to jail, then this woman would still be dying of cancer and there'd be nobody to take care of her. So she says, stealing is not the best thing to do in this situation. They should talk about it.
Talk about it.
And work it out because it just doesn't make sense. But it's the wrong way to think about it. And it wasn't just Kohlberg. It was Freud said women have less sense of justice than men because women are affected by emotions. I mean, all of the psychologists I was teaching at that time, Erikson said, here are my 8 stages of the life cycle, but it's different for women. And it's like, wait a minute, that's half the population.
Right. Roe v. Wade has passed. You interviewed women about abortion.
My research caught a moment in history. This was in 73. And the Supreme Court had said to women, you have a legitimate voice. That led women to start to question, why am I silencing my own voice? I mean, the Supreme, the highest court in the land says, I have a legitimate voice. And it questioned the whole tradition that the good woman speaks for other people, but not for herself. Mm. That was what led me to write In a Different Voice, was listening to these women. One of the things that struck me at the time is a tendency among women to say whatever it was that they wanted to do was selfish, and doing what other people wanted them to do was good. And then they started to question this idea of selflessness. They were being absent, not present. Then the work with girls, the 1980 Handbook of Adolescent Psychology, the editor, Joseph Adelson, he asked someone to write a chapter on female adolescence. And the researcher, Ann Peterson, came back and said there wasn't enough material to even fill one chapter, that adolescent girls hadn't been studied. So with my students, we went and we started listening to girls. What we found, they sort of reached adolescence. They were not to say what they really knew or what they really thought and felt, but they were to figure out what other people wanted them to say and to say that. So they were silencing themselves. And following that, then students of mine did work on boys when they first go to school to be one of the boys or a, quote, real boy, started to shield those parts of themselves, their sensitivity, their tenderness, that might lead other people to think they were girly.
And they started at 7. right?
Yeah, the boys were between 4 and 7. The girls were at adolescence. And that made a huge difference because the adolescents were older and they could really differentiate between how things are and how things are said to be. And it was amazing because I started hearing the words really and actually from girls. What I really think, how I actually feel.
And now that you've said that, I hear it all the time. I'll hear someone who's really accomplished say, well, I don't know, but I think that, no, you do know.
We know that's exactly right. Yeah. Is the word don't come between I and no.
Yeah. You also meet an older man who recalls when he was 7, everyone in class had to get up and sing a song. He was going to sing the gorgeous lullaby from Hansel and Gretel.
Right.
You know, when at night I go to sleep, 14 angels watched you keep. But he sees the incredulous look on the boys, and so he immediately says, I'm just kidding, and sings the Marine hymn.
Right.
And he remembers that.
Exactly.
But staying with your timeline, Carol Gilligan, you wrote a bombshell paper in a different voice in the late 70s, then the blockbuster book in 1982, making the case women's voices were devalued. But there was a later light bulb moment when you realized they weren't being heard. You were listening to attorney Anita Hill at the confirmation hearings for Clarence Thomas to be a Supreme Court judge. She had come forward in 1991 with testimony that he had sexually harassed her. When he was chair of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, she was an advisor to him. People had never heard anything like this testimony before, that he joked to her about pubic hairs. And it was just gripping. The country was riveted. You heard it blasting from a house painter's radio.
Right across the street from mine, these painters had a scaffold. It was amazing because they brought their radio to work every day. And you walk down the street, and here was this extraordinary voice of Anita Hill just flowing down the street like a river, and she was testifying. And I remembered hearing her and then hearing her not being heard. It was when the senators came in, and they just undermined her test. It was as if what she said couldn't be taken seriously. And it's interesting right now when all of these questions have been raised about Clarence Thomas. I mean, and suddenly you think about Anita Hill, and she was saying this in 1991, 1992. Certain voices couldn't be listened to or heard.
So it sounds like, yes, it was so valuable to get people to value and hear women's voices. But it sounds like now you're saying you were further gendering by just talking about women. That different voice of care and sensitivity, I think you're saying in the new book, should be available to everybody.
Is available to everybody.
Is available.
When caring gets gendered feminine, that's a problem. Mm. And so when I began, care was seen as a feminine ethic. And my new book says, no, this is a human voice.
Yeah. Have you heard from anyone who feels that maybe this is an abandonment of something that is unique to women? I'm just curious.
You know, I would flip it, that when we're in a patriarchal structure, family, religion, whatever, the human voice is a voice of resistance. I'm, in a sense, elevating women's voices by saying this is a human voice, this is a voice of resistance, and this is a crucial voice for the 21st century.
You use a fable, the story of the little boy who was the only one who saw that the emperor had no clothes.
Right.
But we have real-life examples of that. You have Greta Thunberg.
I write about Greta Thunberg, and I write about Darnella Frazier, that of all the people who witnessed the murder of George Floyd, only one person, a teenage girl, took out her cell phone, clicked on the camera. I mean, and that's really my answer to your question, Robin, which is this voice of teenage girls. I mean, my book on the girls' research is the one that has the most profound effect on the students I now teach, who are PhD students and law students, the women, the sense of having to not say what you really think and feel as the price of not only being liked and included, but of being successful.
Yeah.
And the resistance to that.
And it leads to a disassociation.
Yeah, exactly.
You're split in half. You're saying things like, I don't know, when you do.
Or, you know, this may be wrong, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Again, the new book is In a Human Voice, 40-something years after Carol Gilligan's earthquake of a book in a different voice. Can you just, what was it like for you to go up against this patriarchy that you were working for and it was revered?
Well, I mean, I taught with Eric Erickson and with Lawrence Kohlberg, and they were very generous up to the point where if they felt it was challenging their theories. I mean, in a sense, it was exactly what we're talking about. And so to say, in my new book, this voice, which was I heard originally as a different voice and was heard as a feminine voice, which meant it could sort of be put to the side, saying, no, this is a human voice. This is all of our voices. And it's really important to listen to it because it's talking about extremely important things right now. Patriarchy is maintained by men's violence or the threat of men's violence and by women's silence. That's why Roe v. Wade has been reversed. A patriarchal voice has been reinstated as the voice of morality and law.
Professor and author Carol Gilligan, her new book is In a Human Voice, kind of an updating of her groundbreaking In a Different Voice. Carol, Professor, thank you so much.
Oh, Robin, thank you. What a pleasure.